Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fort's Comic News, episode 269. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside the future presidential candidate known as Mike.
Nice. I wanted, when you said 269, I really wanted to interrupt you and go, nice, but I waited. I held my tongue.
I was thinking about it all week. Do I call it 200 and nice? Or is that too internet-y?
No, that's just the right amount of internet. Welcome, everybody. We do have a special guest for the two nice episode 269. No, we have Brian Shermer on today. We're going to talk about his awesome book, Quest Aside, with Vault Comics. I read it last week. Chris got me into it. It was it's a fun read, especially if you're a D&D fan. There's a lot of cool little nuggets all over. Even just looking at the art, it's a fantasy. It's Cheers in a fantasy realm, basically, and that's well, you'll look forward to that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really really dig this book. I mean, Vault Comics, they do great stuff. So
yeah, they're killing it. And Corona is trying to kill me. I do have COVID right now, so if I'm a little sounding weird or just low energy, there's a reason for that. I think the coronavirus is trying to stop me from getting to my 30th birthday, but I will prevail.
Oh, you will make it.
I will get there. I will get there.
A lot of money and new merch. Like,
yeah. You have to make it. Chris and I are working on a lot of new marketing things, and if I don't pull through, it's not. It's going to be a lot of money. merchandising.
I mean, we can kind of talk about it. Mike saw the first two new shirts they're going to launch. Yep. He saw Russ for the third new shirt we're going to launch. Mm-hmm. And I'm in talks for two more that we might be launching. So everybody, ooh, look boy. Forward to new merch.
Yeah, new merch. I think Chris and I are working with an artist on doing some cool art, and we've gotten some of the preliminary stuff, and it's spicy meatball. Forgive my awful Italian accent there, but yeah, it's sick.
I hope everybody's gonna like it. We just saw pencils. I just saw roughs, and I was like, this dude.
Yeah.
I gave him a paragraph of what I wanted, and he took my gibberish and made something awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And each time when he's like, so anything you want me to change? I'm like, well, let me see if Mike wants to change anything. So I sent it to Mike, and then he says the same I think, which is like, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. It's beyond my expectations. Honestly, Chris, that's the type of artist you want in your next issue. That goes above and beyond.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff. So, yeah, once everything drops and everything's settled, we'll be plugging the artist for sure. But once we get a handle on everything, and I look forward to that. So,
yeah, really I'm aiming for 4th of July to do the first drop, at least get three new shirts up.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be a reason why it's 4th of July, everybody. Yeah, you'll just have to see and find out.
Yep.
I bought something cool this week.
Yeah, what'd you buy?
So, do you know Walter Flanagan?
Yes, I did see you tweet about this. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, and so he's got a new book with Blue Juice Comics called Knights of the Fifth Dimension. And actually, it's not even out yet.
Okay.
So he finished it. Blue Juice has been like really pushing this. So like actually a year ago, I have a signed copy of the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a San Diego Comic-Con exclusive. It was some Comic-Con exclusive.
Okay.
And it's finally going to come out this month or next month. But for his podcast, Tell Him Steve Dave, they did a trade just for the listeners. And it's even like they're big Kiss fans, so it's like they put the writer and artist blood into the ink and everything.
Oh boy,
like that kind of thing. But yeah, Knights of the Fifth Dimension with this really cool looking cover, and then he even drew a sketch in there, which you can't really see on this, but
yeah, it's on your Twitter though. Yeah, it was a really cool sketch.
So I'm really excited to read it. Like, he got a new, whoever's doing the colors for him, like, he needs to work with all the time because his art pops with this colorist. It's really great. So I'm excited awesome. To read this.
Cool, man. That's always cool when you can get something exclusive like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really cool. I've just been reading a lot of comics, watching a lot of things. We'll talk about Obi-Wan and the Boys.
Let me ask you up front, because it's not on the news thing. Did you watch Miss Marvel?
No, because I will say this. I pulled it up. We were looking for something to watch last night, and I pulled up Disney Plus, and Miss Marvel is up. And I was like, can we just click on that to see if it's streaming? And it is. Miss Marvel is streaming now, everybody. Kind of weird how it just like silently was released.
Yeah.
It doesn't give me
a whole lot of faith, especially when you... Especially when you're like, let's drop this new Marvel thing while the new Star Wars thing is going on.
Yeah.
I literally sat down after Obi-Wan, and we'll talk more about Obi-Wan later, but I watched the trailer that was on Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I'm going to watch it because I have to at least give it a shot.
Yep.
But God, does this not look interesting?
Yeah. And I think they're trying to bury it. I don't know. I don't want to get too much into it between like the whole Disney thing and, you know, the first like Muslim American hero and China has a grip on Disney and all that stuff. So I don't know if it's political reasons they kind of just put it there and didn't advertise it, you know, or anything like that. Who knows? But it did look pretty bad when I watched the trailer.
It's, you know what it is at the end of the day? It's something I keep coming back to. It looks like a teenage drama show. And yeah,
it looks like a Disney Channel show. Drama. Like it looks like a show that belongs on Disney Channel.
Yeah. And I'm too old and I'm too curmudgeonly and I can't do that shit.
Yeah, it's not made for us, Chris. I will watch Paper Girls when it comes out,
though. But I will try it. I'm gonna promise everybody this week I will watch two episodes and give my honest opinion of the first two episodes next week. And
all right.
We'll see.
We heard it here first. Okay. Netflix announced during its annual Geeked Week event. Had no idea that was even a friggin' thing.
Neither did anyone else until this week.
Yeah. They're like, it's the annual Geeked Week. And they're like, you guys have never talked about this before. Let's be honest. Masters of the Universe is returning alongside Kevin Smith and the crew. Awesome. This is great news. New series will continue after the events of The Revelation and is now titled Masters of the Universe Revolution. I'm glad they're letting Kevin pick the titles of this show still. He's like, let's go with another R. I really like this series. I thought the music is epic. The voice acting is superb. The story was really good. Regardless of what all the internet trolls like to scream into the ether about, I think it's a really good show, and it's obviously Netflix sees something if they're bringing it back. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I adored that show. It was beyond shocking that it's like one of my favorite things on Netflix, and I'm down for more. Like, keep them coming.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what this revolution is. Maybe democracy is coming to the He-Man universe.
Oh God. Wait, you mean that you can't just rule because you're a man in tights with big muscles?
That's not. Wasn't there a king and queen in He-Man? I don't know.
Yeah, there was.
I only watched the one show.
Yeah. Or there's the robot eye dude where they like worship like technology. I like that. Those guys are pretty cool. Okay, let's talk about Fistor. Yeah, Fistor. I fisted them all, He-Man. Obi-Wan episode 4. Right off the bat, I don't get the whole like 50 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, 30 minute episode. That was a little disappointing to see straight from the get-go, Disney, I will say, especially the limited series. And especially in that 30 minutes to only have like 5 minutes of cool lightsaber action at the end. really, you're really stretching me thin here. Like, the show's great and all, but like, if we only have so much limited time, we need to really get those lightsabers moving a little sooner. yeah, I think overall, I don't know how much like, is really explored in this episode. We do see Obi-Wan fight some stormtroopers, which is cool. I believe I don't know if they say it in this episode, but like Leia's captured, and they're going to this facility where they're building something. I believe they're building the Death Star, right? Is that what we're assuming? I don't know if they ever say it.
That's what I took it as, because they're building some sort of new base. Yeah, so Death Star makes sense.
Yeah. And that would lead into the show. Or they're making the show about the building of the Death Star, so I'm sure that's how they're going to connect all that. But yeah, so he saves her. Overall, I think, I mean, not my favorite episode. What did you think?
It was a good episode. It wasn't my favorite either, but it had great moments. I like the Jedi prison. That's something that if you played...
Oh, yeah.
What was the recent Star Wars game?
Fallen Order.
Yeah, if you played that, like you've walked through that in the video game. Some of the cameos in there were great, like characters we've seen from Clone Wars and other things. I did think it was a little goofy that, like, Obi-Wan's big plan to sneak Leia onto a ship on a dock full of stormtroopers is like, I'll just put my coat around her and nobody will notice.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Like, that was, they didn't even take a second to think that one through.
Yeah, no way, yeah.
Yeah, but that true. Sequence is cool when, like, the A-Wing comes down and starts blasting.
Mm-hmm.
I liked where the episode went. I wanted more, and I'm excited for next week to get more.
Yeah.
We're
almost done with it, right? A couple more episodes? A few more episodes?
Two more, I believe. And I'll just say this, with each passing episode, I grow to love the little girl that plays Leia more and more every episode. Like, she's just so good.
Yeah, she is really good. Yeah.
Like,
yep. Yeah, we'll see.
And I learned a new Star Wars tidbit this week.
What's that?
The little droid that the little girl has.
Yeah.
What was it, Lola?
Uh-huh.
That's actually the name of a parakeet that Carrie Fisher had growing up.
Oh, okay. Cool. Fun little fact for all you Star Wars fans. That is pretty cool.
I'm learning new Star Wars fun facts every week with the show.
Wow. Great. I'm happy. Happy for you. The Boys episode 4. Man, this show's wild. This is the episode where we finally get to see the... The elephant in the room is the giant dildo fight scene. I can't believe they made something so absurd and so serious at the same time, because, like, I can't think of her name.
Mika
sees herself as a monster, and tries to rescue these, like, prostitutes while she kills all these dudes with dildos, and then, like, you know, you try not to laugh because she feels bad, but it's a pretty hilarious scene how she's killing all these guys with these, not just dildos, they're like all different dildos related to the Dawn of the Seven. So they're Justice League dildos. And then at the same token, they have like the whole scene where they're breaking, Soldier Boy out of this prison cell. They find out that Soldier Boy, and there's a hamster that's souped up, super powered hamster, that kills a guy. Yeah, there's some crazy shit happening in this episode. And then Huey, the whole I wasn't expecting her friend to die so suddenly. So, like, It's all up to pretty much Huey and the boys to save Starlight, because I mean, Homelander has just gone off the deep end. And he was like aware of the plan of like the heroes trying to turn their backs on him and like kill him. So.
Yeah. So they announced they're doing season 4 now, and mm-hmm. it feels like Homelander's at the point where he needs to die.
Yeah. Right.
Like there's no turning back from, or I guess they could go further with Homelander, but like how long can we keep Starlight in the 7 is my question. And it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in where they go with that. The one thing I don't like was they're making Butcher like too much of an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see how his actions so far can be forgiven. At least from a personal standpoint, like if I was Frenchie and Mika and somebody treated me like that, it would be like I would do exactly what their plan is, which is like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm done.
Yeah. So you're right too. I don't know how he's going to get those people. Like the things that are happening in this episode is like, how is he going to get him to stay? How is he going to get MM to stay? Because the whole Soldier Boy thing, like, something, the big change needs to happen for Homelander, and a big change needs to happen for Butcher. So something's going to happen in the next episode, I think. I don't think we can keep dragging it along. Like, you know, these guys are two big players and they're both being assholes, and like either they're going to do something like kill someone, or someone's going to kill them, or like, you know, they're going to disband the boys. I don't know.
I could see MM sticking around, not especially now that Soldier Boy is alive and out there.
Yeah.
He has the motivation to stay and like want to use Butcher's brutality to finish the job.
Mm-hmm.
And Butcher actually treats him with like humanity, where like he doesn't give the other two the humanity that he gives MM, which is what bothers me. Right. Like they're not tools, they're not pawns. That's not how they're supposed to be treated. So I'm really curious on how they flip that script, because there's only so long where I can sit there and be like, why are they still here? Like you got to give me a reason why they're still here, because it doesn't make any sense at a certain point.
I'm sure like if we do see it happen in an episode, it's got to happen like next episode. I mean,
yeah.
She's almost dead. I mean, she's almost dead or supposedly dying. So it's like, how do you come back from that?
Yeah. But I do like that now the 7's got more of a less of an antagonistic vibe and more of the vibe I got from the comics, which was that's the wrong way to put it, because they're still antagonistic, but they're not as like up front, like hate each other. They're more like behind each other's backs trying to score points.
Yeah.
With the big guy. Yeah. So it was a good episode, you know, Butcher and the crew go to Russia.
Yep.
So I'm liking this season so far.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Brutality's
been off the charts, man.
Oh yeah, it's been crazy, that's for sure. They've overdone it this season for sure. We'll see how the next couple episodes go. We get the reveal with Soldier Boy. It's like, I just want to see more of him, but that we just see him leave. So
I got a feeling he's a big part of the next episode.
Oh yeah. Movie news. Warner Brothers has announced that they have come to terms with Joaquin Phoenix for a sequel, The Joker. And they probably gave him a buttload of cash to do that. They also,
they did give him a
buttload. Oh, they did. Oh, it's confirmed. Yeah.
He flat out said that's the only reason he came back.
Todd Phillips is directing again. Mm-hmm. Also, there's some rumors now. These were happening before, like when I initially talked about a sequel, that like now this is just rumors that Lady Gaga would be involved as like the second, the co-star or something. And I don't know who else she could be playing besides Harley Quinn. I mean, don't know. Lady Gaga's got a great, she's a great actress, very talented singer. So I don't know what the hell they're going to do with her if they do use her, but that was just one of the rumors I heard. If he's only coming back for a boatload of cash, hopefully he can still act the part that he wants to do it. Yeah, but that's exciting. I mean, I like the first one. It wasn't anything spectacular, though. I will watch the second one.
I was kind of on the other side of you in the first one. Like, I didn't really care for it. And as far as that rumor goes, that just gives me another reason not to want to watch it. but I have differing opinions on Lady Gaga than you do.
Well, it's not just me. Like, if she's in the movie, I'm sure the movie could make almost $1 billion just for people going to see it because she's in it, you know? So it's like...
Yeah, because I'm the minority on this one. But that's fine. But, I thought the first one was one of the most overrated things I've seen in a long time. I'm like, this isn't anything all that great, I thought, personally. And I don't understand justification for a sequel, but they've been trying to get the sequel done since it made all that money. Now they're going to do it. We'll see what happens.
Regardless of Lady Gaga, I think if you have a sequel for this movie, you need another big character or main character. Like, you need something for her to play off of, for him to play off of. You can't just have him going around on his own again, you know, for another movie. Like, there has to be something else there.
Yeah. It runs into two issues for me. One is if you bring in, no matter who it is, if you bring in Harley Quinn, it's too soon. That means he somehow got arrested and was in Arkham. And so the whole movie's like based in Arkham, essentially. Or there's some sort of time jump and she's already Harley Quinn. But the other problem that this movie is going to have for me is unless there's a huge time jump, which then we're dealing with like old man Joker, is we run into the same problem that Gotham had for me and Smallville had, where it's like all the villains are so much older than the hero. Because in that movie, we saw the death of Thomas and Martha. Mm-hmm. So Bruce is a little kid.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So you would have to jump what? 10 years, 15 years to get make him Batman?
Well, I mean, this is a whole Elseworlds story, too, so we don't know if they would even follow any of those rules, right? They could do whatever they want.
Yeah, you can do your own thing.
But it has to make sense, and you need like a grip to, like, he's in the Joker costume at the end of the movie, and he's going to be in the Joker costume this movie, so, like, but... If he just run around killing people, it's like, okay, there's got to be a reason to have him in a sequel, you know?
In the sequel, he has to butt heads with somebody. Who's he going to butt heads with?
Yeah, right? Yeah, besides the cops. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't want it just to be... I mean, actually, if it was just Bullock, that'd be fantastic. But... I'll say that. If they hire Bullock and I see one screenshot of a name... a fat actor with a donut.
Yeah.
I'll take back everything and I'll go see this just because I want to see a live action Bullock.
There you go. We did get a Bullock, I think, in Batman 89.
They'll name a random cop Bullock.
Yeah.
Just so like people like me would be like, oh my God, it's Bullock.
Yeah.
But it's like
some random fat cop.
I want to see the asshole with a heart of gold glutton Bullock that I got in the cartoon where like he hates Batman or, you know, if we don't have a Batman, obviously, but he hates Batman. But at the same time, like he's willing to work with him because he's still a good guy, even though you kind of think he's a bad guy. So,
I guess we'll see. Well, either way, Joaquin Phoenix is going to come out on top with all that money. For a long half time, million,
or half a billion for
half. I was gonna, yeah, I was going to say, geez, yeah, they made, yeah, easily, right, for an R-rated movie is crazy. For a long time, Marvel Studios has been trying to put together the Thunderbolts for an MCU appearance. Now it looks like it's a reality. Kevin Feige and crew have signed Jake Schreier to direct and Eric Pearson to write the script. It's going to begin production next summer. So we're getting the Thunderbolts to the MCU, just without Thunderbolt Ross, because I believe he's dead. Right?
But he's not part of the Thunderbolts, technically.
Oh, okay. So that's cool if you're a Thunderbolts fan.
Yeah, I just... I wonder if we'll do the big reveal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 20, 30-year-old comic by now, so if you haven't read it, I mean, that's your fault. But like the big reveal in the original Thunderbolts was that there was this new group of heroes, and we find out that it's the villains, and that the main guy who's like this trying to be this big hero is Norman Osborn, like Green Goblin.
Yeah.
So we'll probably won't do Green Goblin because Spider-Man. So who will that be? Will they do it that way, or will they just jump into this will they just make it a Suicide Squad-esque thing?
Yeah, that's probably what they're going to do. Yep. Yeah.
But I'm down because that means more Zemo.
Yep. There you go. Yeah, so they're... And, I don't see it on here, but the Black Adam trailer released this week or last week. Did you check it out?
Yes, I forgot about that, but yeah.
So it's funny that you, just because you said like Thunderbolts could be like a Suicide Squad, because like the Black Adam movie looks a lot like Avengers to me, or it looks like not even just Avengers. It just looks like it has the like lens of a Marvel movie. I think the trailer was really good. I'm still, you know, like the Rock, like talking about the history of Black Adam and stuff was fine. I don't really know how they're going to fit the humor in with how serious his character is. So I guess we'll see how that works out. Dr. Fate looks amazing. I hope he has a lot of screen time. And then we get to see, you know, the other JSA, like Adam Smasher, Cyclone, right? Hawkman, isn't it? So yeah, I'm excited. I thought it was a good trailer. It's kind of like, and they do explore the whole like, are you gonna be a hero or are you gonna like do your own thing? And I think that's pretty cool. So I do like where they're going.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. The Rock actually showed some acting chops, which he's not known for.
Right.
And this is someone who loves The Rock, so that's not a slam.
No, it's not.
I also am curious because there's one scene in there where we see kind of a greenish blur in the sky.
Oh.
Is there a Green Lantern in this movie?
Oh.
And
like an Alan Scott?
Is it Alan Scott? Yeah.
Oh my God. That'd be the best kept secret. I think the green blur, is that supposed to be Cyclone?
I didn't know Cyclone was a part of this movie, so maybe...
Yeah, she is part of the movie, so...
If so, that's a huge disappointment. I'd rather have Alan Scott.
Yeah.
No offense to her or whoever's playing her.
She was like one of the ones I didn't really care about in the JSA, right? Cyclone was like... She just turns into a tornado.
Well, it's like, give me the full roster.
Yeah.
Give me the weird-looking like Flash...
Dr. Like, Midnight, like, come on.
Yeah,
no Jake Eric. Maybe at the end, like, the post-credits, we're like, oh, my name's Jake Eric. Roll credits. They'll do something like that.
The post-credits, if this doesn't set up a JSA movie, like,
yeah.
Somebody needs to get fired at Warner Brothers.
Yeah. It almost looks like a JSA movie, to be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited for it. I thought the trailer was really hype. Cool. Yeah. But let's jump to this interview with Mr. Brian Shermer, and we'll see everybody on the other side.
All right, everybody. We got another very special guest for you all. I want everyone to welcome to the show Brian Shermer. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be here.
Hey, glad you could be here. Glad you're caffeinated, ready to chat with us.
Oh, indeed.
I had the pleasure of reading both issues of Quest Aside last week, so we got to talk about that. But before we get into it, and Chris has got the beautiful physical copy there, also available. Let's hear your origin story, Brian. Where did it all start as far as like writing comics and stuff for you?
As far as writing comics goes, it was probably a little over 10 years ago. I mean, I've been writing my entire life in one form or another. And a little over a decade ago, I had a chance meeting with two people that subsequently became close friends. One of them was a guy named Dan Cooney, who was teaching comics, all aspects of it, at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco. And he was a guy who was supplementing his income with independently published comics. I mean, he had a table, a booth at San Diego every year, and was just, you know, shucking and jiving and doing his thing. And I'd never really thought about comics writing being a job. I mean, I knew it was. I mean, I'd read comics my entire life. I knew who people were, but I never really thought about it. I was like, oh, that's an actual, yeah, I hadn't thought about it in those terms. And then very shortly thereafter, through a mutual friend, wound up having lunch with somebody named Kelly Sue DeConnick. And we
name
sat
drop.
And had a chat a little bit. I will try to keep that to a minimum, but it happened.
Okay.
And you know, so we had a chat over lunch because she was in town here. I live in San Francisco at present. She was in town with Matt for a show back when they still had comic conventions here in San Francisco. Subtweet. And we had lunch. And again, it was me thinking, it's like, oh, here's another person that is not only, you know, bringing in some supplemental income, but she and her husband are both, you know, this is their job. They're making a living doing this. And I thought, all right. You know, I've tried writing most any other thing under the sun. Let's give comics a shot. And, let's see, how lengthy do we want to make this? So I did, with some friends and coworkers, we put together a little self-published comic, that was just short stories that I wrote. That we wound up, you know, selling it at WonderCon, I think the following year. I think it moved that quickly. And then, so what really leapfrogged me into doing it on the regular was, I want to say that same year, San Diego Comic-Con rolls around. And in advance, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, well, who do I talk to about getting work? And this small publishing company, honestly, and I feel terrible, I always forget the name of it because A, it's been 10 years, B, the company still exists but never really took off. Anyway, they advertised that they were going to have a dedicated booth and it was going to be nothing but portfolio reviews the entirety of San Diego Comic-Con. And they're saying, oh, we want to see this from, you know, illustrators, we want to see this from colorists. And then I read a thing about writers and they say, oh, hey, we want to check out, you know, your scripts. And it needs to be, you know, this many pages. It needs to be with an established character, not a creator-owned one, which for those that don't know, that is extremely rare that a publisher wants to see you, you know, do a script for Captain America or Shazam or anything.
Right. Right.
And I found out about this less than a week before Comic-Con. And so I had, I think, 2 days to come up with something and write what I want to say was like a 6-page script. And I wound up writing a 5 or 6 page script for a Batman short that was
nice.
Basically
nice.
Batman by way of Fight Club in like 5 or 6 pages. And I go to Comic-Con, I've got my script, I have my appointed time where I'm going to be meeting the publisher and editor-in-chief. And I get there and I'm sitting outside. This was actually up near where they have the signings at Comic-Con, not down on the main floor. And so there's all these chairs. And so there's maybe 15, 20 people waiting to meet with this guy, waiting for their appointed time. And I look around and every single one of them has a huge ass portfolio. And I'm thinking, these guys are all artists or colorists or maybe inkers. I am the only writer. And so I pull out my phone and I go back and I check their website again. And sure enough, I misread the damn thing. And it said, writers, here's what we want from you. Please do not bring this to San Diego Comic-Con. Please only submit through our website.
I read that
and I'm like, oh, shit. And 5 minutes later, it's my turn. And he calls me up. And I'm like, ah, fuck it. I go up there and
we'll do it live.
I shake his hand and I tell him, look, I totally screwed up. I totally misread this. And here's, you know, this is what happened. And we had a good laugh. And he said, look, I'm not going to dock you for this. I'll take the script. I'll read it. I'll read it. I'll let you know what I think. I'm like, cool. Thank you. Sorry for the confusion. So no problem. And maybe a month later, I'm at a shopping for clothes or something. And my phone rings and I pick it up and it's the editor / publisher of this little publisher. And says, I read your script. I really like it. Let's talk again in a couple weeks. And why don't you come up with some ideas to pitch me for a graphic novel? The good news is a couple weeks later, I pitched him a couple ideas. He really liked one. I wound up scripting like a 80, 90 page graphic novel, sent it in. They tried out a few artists and then it just, nothing. Then nothing happened. It just died out. Yeah. I did that. On the one hand, I did that for no money. On the other hand, it got me even more scripting experience, which was cool.
Yeah.
And I will skip over bits and pieces here. It did lead to me doing my first self-published books, which then led to getting my first book at Image, which then got me to Vault, which leads us to Quest Aside and here today.
Okay. Wow. So it's a really small publisher, like what would it be, like Golden Apple Comics or something like that. I think that's one that does publishing. Or
I might remember the name, but I don't want to shit talk somebody that's still doing good work.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Also I don't want to misname the company and name.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's interesting though, going from like, oh, you wrote this 6-page story about Batman. Okay, now give me a 90-page script about something like an idea that you have. Your own idea. Yeah, that's a pretty big jump.
Right. And I mean, looking back at it now, it's like that's a really weird way of doing business.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I did a really solid 6-page Batman story. Now give me your own idea. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's cool, though.
It's funny, though, but that's, I know Mad Cave Studios does it that way.
Oh, and really?
They've gotten. Yeah, no, if you've ever read Nottingham, that's how that book came about. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge of what I've heard behind the scenes, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a writing contest almost, right?
They do like a talent search every year and they get new writers, artists, so on and so forth. And that was one of the things that came out of it was that book, which ended up being a really great book if you haven't read it.
Yeah.
So let's talk about a great book, Quest Aside, and Vault Comics. So you got into Vault. Let's talk about how did that come about with Quest Aside at Vault? Where did that all start?
I was fortunate enough that was it five years ago, 6 years ago? Vault did their very first show, which was Emerald City Comic Con in whatever year that was, 5-6 years ago. And they were literally tabling right behind us. My buddy Jason McNamara and I were sharing a table. And we were on the end, and right behind us were Adrian Wassel, I want to say Damien, his brother, who is the publisher, and Tim Daniel were all back there. And my buddy Jason knew Tim, and so we got chatting, and then I got started talking with Adrian and Damien, found out what they were literally just starting out. I think they had their very first titles. Actually, I know they had only their very first titles at the time. And we just kept in touch, right? And we'd see each other at shows. And I had an invitation to pitch, but I didn't really have anything that I felt like throwing that way. But every time we met up, it was kind of like, okay, yeah, well, one of these days we're gonna work on something. And I had a couple years ago now, I had pitched them on a kind of a 12 issues fantasy sci-fi series. And we talked about it for a good long time. We did some, did some revisions and eventually got to the point where, they had other books in the pipeline that were a bit similar to what I was doing. And so they said, well, can't really do this now. Let's hold on to this. Maybe we try something a little tighter, a little either shorter or something that can become an ongoing. And these are a couple of the subgenres that, we're looking for these days. And one of them at the time was fantasy. A couple of years ago, I'm talking to Adrian. He says, everybody is knowing us now as doing, sci-fi. And this is even before they started getting into horror. Right. And he says, no one's pitching me on fantasy. I'm like, well, I have this idea that's been rolling around in my head, and I gave him the gentle pitch of Quest Aside, which is basically like, you know, high fantasy Cheers.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Said, oh, that's what it is. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I said, oh, that sounds kind of cool. You know, send me something. Write up something. Send it to me. And I did, and we knocked it back and forth for a few months, and eventually got it to a point where, you know, where I was implementing the feedback that Adrian was giving me, and he was liking what he was seeing, and we got to a point where it's like, yeah, I like this. Let's move forward and let's start looking for an artist. And that was, I want to say early 2021. So it was around January, February 2021, where we started looking at artists. And I put together a list of a few people. He put together a list of a few people, and we both worked through them. And most everyone was, you know, pretty good. Or you could see it's like, oh, this person might work. But it's still just we still hadn't found someone that was resonating for us both. Yeah. And what happened was I want to say April of last year, Twitter had one of their semi-annual portfolio days.
Oh, and I didn't know they did that.
Oh, yeah. A few times a year, there'll be, you know, I don't know who decrees it or if anyone does at this point.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my portfolio on there, put hashtag portfolio day and woo.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So there had been a day back in April of last year, and I was just going through the hashtag and came upon this one person's work and thought, you know, she's doing, she's doing looking at her basic portfolio, she does fantasy, she does great action, she does a variety of body types, you know, not every character looks the same. Yeah, I'll send this to Adrian and say, what do you think of? And he wrote back and said, yeah, absolutely, if she's interested, and then he reached out, and fortunately she was on board. And what I'm talking about is her name is Elena Gogu. And the reason I even know how to pronounce her last name is she was kind enough to lay it out the other day on social media somewhere. It says it's like Grogu, but without the R.
Oh, okay. There you go. No. Yeah.
And, so, and that's how we got together. And then, awesome. I started working at, we got a contract and started working on scripts right then.
So most people do a fantasy book and they think, I want to do my Lord of the Rings, my high fantasy. Why did you want to set it in a bar?
So there's a fun origin story for that as well, which again is another. I don't want it to sound like I only go to Emerald City, but it was another Emerald City Comic Con, and this was probably 2019, I guess. So about 3 years ago, and I was on a panel for Fair Lady. Fair Lady had either just started or was just about to start over at Image, and I was on a panel with Kieran Gillen, Mags Visaggio, Daniel Barnes, who wrote the Black Mage over Oni, and we were just on this fantasy panel and talking about writing and art and everything associated with it and where ideas come from. And at some point, we just started on this notion of, why is there never a fantasy story that's just set, you know, in the Prancing Pony, you know, or in a pub? And so, you know, different ideas started getting thrown around about what that would look like. And it was, you know, no one had any designs on this whatsoever. But it stuck with me when it was over, and thinking, it's like, wow, that's actually a really cool idea. It's a simple sell. It's an easy pitch. I mean, if anybody knows Cheers, you say fantasy Cheers and you're done. And if they don't know it, you could say, well, it's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's Always Sunny in Waterdeep, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's awesome.
And from my experience, it's the ideas that crop up that just don't go away over a period of time that turn out to be the ones that bear any fruit. And that was something I held on to for a while. And then, yeah, when I was having the meetings with Adrian and he asked about a fantasy pitch, and I said, well, what about this? And that's what stuck. And thankfully, none of those people are coming to me for residuals.
When I saw on, I can't remember if it was Vault that originally said it, but I know it's on the back of the book. It's Always Sunny in the Realm. And I was like, sold. You got me right there.
Awesome. I'm in. It's Always Sunny in the Realm. Cards on the Table. That was Adrian's, Adrian Wassel, the editor-in-chief. That was his contribution.
That's very cool.
His only contribution to the book was coming up with the temporary elevator pitch. No, that's
going to be awesome. He'd love to hear that. Yeah, and I think it's a great idea, but I mean, just for our listeners and stuff, that it revolves around a main character that's a retired adventurer, pretty much, right?
Yeah. It's basically about this guy named Barrow, who was he was basically his realm's equivalent of like Aragorn, running around, yep, kicking ass, slaying dragons, toppling liches, and freeing the peoples. But instead of becoming becoming the king, or ultimately, dying on one last crusade, he goes for one last crusade, banks all the money, and retires. He's the one. I've always really dug the classic stories. It's a western or anything where it's somebody going or a crime story, right, where somebody's going out for one last score or one last ride. And I figured you never see that. That's another thing you never see in fantasy, is somebody who has done their last quest, and that's we pick up. After that, we figure out what happens after the fact, and after the fact, he basically becomes like Sam Malone in Cheers, where instead of being the one-time baseball great, he's the one-time great defender of the realm who now runs a bar and serves up drinks to the new heroes and heroines.
Yeah, and there's a little more weight to it though, because of the each individual character in the there's a couple layers to the story, I'd say, because you have the bar, right, and it's really interesting with all the characters, like the undead chef. I love that. That's probably one of my favorites.
I was gonna say that.
Yeah. I can't remember his name. Ray.
Everybody loves Ray.
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously, I think he is on I think he might be on every single cover for issue one, and there were eight or nine variants, and he is featured on every single one. In some cases, he gets a lot of love.
Yeah,
justly so.
Well, there's your one shot side story right there.
Yeah, there you go, the Ray one shot.
Oh, dude, if they would green light that, I would write that in a heartbeat. I would demand extra pages.
Yeah, that's do it up. But then there's the extra added lore of, okay, something happened, he has a relationship with the king, the king is an asshole, he's taxing everybody harder than usual and stuff like that, so you've added a little more to the story too, though, so you're painting like a kind of a bigger picture there too, right?
Yeah, I didn't want as much as I can say it's Fantasy Cheers, I didn't want to write Fantasy Cheers. I didn't want it to just be about gags and will they or won't they, equivalent of Sam and Diane. It needed more of a conflict, to sustain it. And I wanted the series to be, somewhat episodic. So you've got different characters and guest stars, if you will, who come in each issue, who are, patrons. But it needed a spine, it needed something to carry it through. And I wanted it to be something more weighty. And the notion that the king is going to shut this place down and reveal that only to Barrow, our tavern owner and protagonist, and he's the only one that knows this is going to happen, and he is the one who is then struggling with this throughout our first arc, and so you get more weight with that as opposed to it just be joke, and it. It allowed a lot of opportunity for me to play with heavier themes, but not making it a dark and dreary tale, which I didn't want to do either, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil too much, but I'd also like anyone, and I'm sure this is a lot of our audience because Mike and I are these people, but anyone that's played D&D knows with
everyone should be like us,
the fantasy stuff and, yeah, and curses and stuff like that, and you play with those as well in like humorous ways. Like I said, I don't want to spoil the one moment in issue two, but like that kind of stuff really hits hard with me too when they happen, because I can just picture it in a D&D
environment,
setting, mm-hmm. like that mm-hmm. happening and being yep. kind of a joke that we play off. But then, like, this person now has to deal with it for the rest of his life.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The, yeah. It's funny for Chris because his character was the one in D&D. I would just sit at the bar to drink the whole night away. But if he had a curse where he wouldn't be able to get drunk, I think it would just, he would go insane.
Yeah, I think one of the, I don't remember how early in the process it was, but coming up with the notion that not only would Barrow have to be, you know, dealing with trying to resolve this issue of the king threatening to buy the place out from under him, but also contending with ostensibly more curses than any other person known to exist, it was just stupid fun. And we get to, you know, we get to reveal more and more of them as the story goes on. And you just see, you know, how many, God, I hate this, disabilities, I hate to say, that he has to contend with on top of trying to keep his quote-unquote family together. Yeah, it just, it makes, I don't know, it makes every scene that I write with him seem to have a bit more meat to it.
Yeah, and I like the, you said family there, because that's another dynamic too, is like you said you have special guests coming into the tavern, and like adventurers that have fought with him and stuff, and they're like, you were so great and everything was so great, and he's like, well, this is my family now, and they almost kind of like disrespect him for that. You yeah. know, like, this is your family now, like, you killed dragons beside me and all this stuff, but like, now you know you've thrown everything away for these people in a tavern. So I do like that whole dynamic too.
Cool, thank you. Yeah. I'm not really giving anything, I don't really feel I'm giving anything away by saying this, but it was mm-hmm. most stuff I write ultimately turns out to be a process of discovery, and I don't think I'm alone in experiencing that. But if the story is ultimately about anything, it's about the family, found families, and the families we make, and the fact that sometimes, you know, you may be best friends with somebody or a group of people, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to last forever. You know, you will grow apart. Things will happen. People change, especially over time and distance. And ultimately, what one might learn by the end of this first arc is that that's okay. That's a part of life. You know, people change, people grow apart, and you get new friends, and you may build new families.
Life lessons at the tavern.
Exactly.
And I did catch the first story arc part there. So can we talk about the structure of the story? What's your plan overall for this? I mean, obviously, how does Vault feel? I think you guys have had a pretty popular book here, right? So you have one planned story arc, and
short answer, yes. Long answer, as with virtually everything at pretty much every publisher these days, it is an ongoing until it's not.
Okay.
We have had initial discussions about the next arc. We are not in production yet. I think the big tell is going to be as we record this tomorrow. Is going to be final order cutoff FOC for our third issue. And I think those numbers are really going to tell, are basically going to tell Vault if we're good to keep going. So I for myself plan to have a chat with them in a couple weeks once they've got the final numbers in and see where we're going. And I'd like to continue. I definitely have plans for all of the characters. Worst case scenario, if the support just isn't there, I think we'll be sitting with a very solid miniseries that will hold up and be a nice little perennial favorite.
Mm. Okay.
So for that first arc, are we talking about 5 issues, 6 issues?
Yeah, 5 issues.
Okay, good.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I should point out that so the 5th issue will drop in September, but then the trade, for anybody out there listening, watching, who is a trade waiter, be advised, it's not dropping until March.
Oh, wow.
We have a long lead time for that night, which I think is becoming the norm for Vault, in part because they I can't remember who it is, but their trade distribution is through a book publisher, as many comic publishers are these days. And so they need a substantial amount of lead time for the bookstores as opposed to comic shops.
Wow. Okay. Interesting.
I know this is far flung. You said it's in March, but has there been any talks about what the trade's going to look like, or if you're going to do like a hardcover or anything?
We have not had that level of discussion yet. I would love to have a hardcover. I would love for us to have process pages in the back and that sort of thing. I'm always a fan of that stuff. But that's a little far afield at this point.
In my head, I'm hoping, because this will get me to double dip. I think it was Barbaric.
Good to know.
Did that nice hardcover with that looks like a fantasy book.
Yeah.
And I double dipped on that too, because I was like, that's just too nice not to get.
Yep. I'm going to give this as feedback to them and say, hey, I'm talking to people and they really want there to be serious back matter in the trade. And I heard the term double dipping. So
this guy, like, he's willing to buy a second one if we make it for him.
No, I'll say, hey, I got this guy who I gave him free PDFs and he went and bought an issue. And then he's talking about buying the book. So let's make that happen. I will definitely, I will definitely be having that discussion. If for some reason they don't want to do it, if they want to keep it an affordable, low cost trade, then I will probably be easily persuaded to just put process stuff up on social media or the interwebs for free, because I don't want to. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff there, and it'd be just kind of sad for it to just only be seen by half a dozen people.
Yeah. Understand.
And that's great stuff for people coming up that want to learn how to make comics 100%. Or aspire to do it. Like, I used to read I think it was Bendis who did it a lot. I used to read like the scripts in the back so I could learn how to write scripts. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always helpful for people that want to try it out for themselves.
Yeah.
Brian, that's awesome. So I'm pumped to read the rest of the first story arc. So I'm hoping that all five issues are being published, and best of luck with that.
Thanks, sir.
Is there anything else you want to talk about today, or anywhere we can send our listeners to pick up the book?
As cliche as it sounds, the irons I have in the fire are not the types of things that I can as yet reveal and discuss, yada, yada, yada.
Understood.
Primarily, I'm at Brian Shermer on Twitter, and annoyingly, I am at Brian _ Shermer on Instagram. Yeah, okay. It's a pain in the ass. What happens when I've been on Twitter for over a decade, and I jumped onto Instagram maybe three years ago. So so it goes. I have a website, but dear God, it is I haven't updated it in probably 3 years. Maybe I'll get on that.
There you go.
But yeah, that's pretty much the easiest places to locate me. While I will not be tabling there, my wife and I will be at San Diego Comic Con for the first time in obviously years.
Nice.
Which should be cool. And I have every reason to suspect that I'll be on at least one panel for Vault. They have not finalized that yet, but I'm given the Quest Aside is happening and people seem to like it, I suspect they'll trot me out, which I always enjoy. If you've got anybody listening across the pond, the next show that we are definitely doing is Thought Bubble. Thought Bubble in the UK in awesome. November. So we are getting, my wife is the comics writer Danny Coleman. She and I will be co-tabling as guests at Thought Bubble in early mid-November. I can't remember the dates, but it's a good time.
That's exciting. Over to Europe for that, and there you go.
Yeah, we did it once before. I want to say probably 20. I think it was 2019. It was the last show we did before. Oh, the world changed, and we had lockdown and everything. And it's a fantastic time.
Awesome. Well, best of luck with all that.
Yeah, so everyone out there, Quest Side Issue 2 hit comic shelves last week, so run to your local comic shop to see if they still got copies. And Issue 3 should be out next month. But I'll have links down below. If you do not have a local comic shop, I'll put links to not only Brian's website, but either Vault's web store, or if I have no other choice, the Amazon web store, so you can pick up a copy yourself. So make sure everybody go follow Brian, and thanks again for taking the time and coming talking to us, man. And I'm loving the book so far, so I look forward. Hopefully it's a huge hit and it lasts 100 more issues, because it's been just a blast so far.
Yeah, same here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome back to The Other Side.
The Other Side. So check out Quest Aside on The Other Side. Issue 2 is out. Issue 3 is out next month. Give it your money.
Good stuff.
It's really good stuff. Comic news. DC, this is like the thing that broke the internet this week. I know everybody hates that saying. I even hate that saying, so I don't know why I said it. DC is expanding the DC Horror line in the most unexpected way this fall. It's a 6-issue series titled Sergeant Rock versus the Army of the Dead. And they even tapped the infamous Bruce Campbell to write it, with Eduardo Risso on the art. So Bruce Campbell's writing a comic, everybody, about one of the lamest characters next to Commandy in the DC universe, if you ask me personally. But I will be picking the hell up out of this book, and probably a lot of the variant covers for this book, because the variants have Gary Frank, you got Frank Quitely, all these big names doing the art for this like book about Sergeant Rock, but Bruce Campbell's writing it, so hell yeah, I'm on board.
I like Sergeant Rock. I'm gonna say it.
Oh man, really?
See, when you said lamest character next to Commandy, you pronounced the Flash wrong.
Oh boy. Okay. All right then.
No. I enjoy Sergeant Rock when he shows up. I'm not gonna be the one of these guys like, I brought everything he's in. No, like, but when he shows up, I really like him. Dude, this is basically, I mean, from the way I took it, because Sergeant Rock is a World War II character.
Yeah.
This is Bruce Campbell doing Nazi zombies.
Oh, yeah, because the cover, there's Nazi zombies on the cover. Yeah.
I'm in. Been a video game trope forever. It's been kind of a video game joke forever. And it's just you don't have to try that hard with Nazi zombies. Hitler wanted to do some weird shit. He created zombies. Boom. Nazi zombies. Just do that. Yep. And it's cool. Yep. And it's fun. And I like it. So I'm down for this.
Comic book science. Yeah, I'm definitely checking it out. I'll be checking this out too. Ahoy Comics just announced a new sci-fi adventure hitting the shelves this September titled Highball. Highball is a comedy adventure about a drunk space pilot trying to save the galaxy one pint at a time. It's going to be written by Stuart Moore, art by Fred Harper. Sounds awesome. I'm sold.
Yeah, I might actually pick this one month to month, as opposed to trade weight it like I have been.
Yeah, this is it's Han Solo. It's a story of Han Solo.
It's Han Solo, but a drunk, and it's Stuart Moore, who did like my favorite Ahoy book and Captain Ginger. So
yep,
it sounds like a lot of fun.
Dark Horse Comics announced that David Duchovny is co-writing a new graphic novel alongside Philip Savey called Kepler. Sevi will also be drawing the comic as well. Kepler is about a planet called Kepler, where Homo sapiens go extinct and another hominid species take over. The other species thrives until Homo sapiens return and ruin everything. Kepler will hit comic shelves this fall. So David Duchovny, well-known actor for X-Files, obviously. That other show where he was a failing writer.
Where he played himself, Californication.
That show was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
That show was amazing. Don't know him for writing comics. This graphic novel doesn't sound too interesting to me. Don't know if I'll be checking it out, but
it was also described as like Planet of the Apes light. I am one of the biggest proponents of my age group of Planet of the Apes, but I don't know if I need a different Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. No.
So it'll depend on a lot. I like Philip Seavey, former guest of the show. And like I said, I like Duchovny and stuff he's done. Like, what was the other that's alien comedy that he did?
I didn't even know he wrote one.
I didn't write it. He was in it was a movie he did, and they killed the aliens with Head and Shoulders. I wish I could remember the name of it.
Oh, it's not. I'm not. It's not. Mars Attacks.
No, but anyways, I like that movie too. So
okay, I didn't even know.
I like him, but I don't know if I want to like check out
his writing,
his comic book.
Yeah,
the movie I'm thinking of is Evolution.
Oh, Evolution. Yeah, that one. Yeah,
it's got Sean William Scott and Orlando Jones in it.
Yeah, that is a 2000s movie for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about what we read this week. Basically, I'm going to skim through what I read until we get to Flashpoint and Dark Crisis.
Which we have to read talk about together, because theories abound are coming.
So, what did I read this week? Swamp Thing number 13. This one's really good. Basically, the Parliament of Trees find a new avatar, and it's his brother, because his brother, he's being very passive as Swamp Thing, and they want someone that's going to do action. But one of the Parliament's agreeing sides with the current Swamp Thing and is like, I think they're going down the wrong path. And then Green Lantern shows up and says he needs help because there's some aliens that have showed up, and he thinks it's related to like all the bad stuff going on with Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing's still really good. This was Rogue Sun issue 4. Still really good. We find out that the mother is a hero as well. So that was interesting. There's Radiant Red. It's really good if you like the Radiant Black series. This one gets a little more involved with like the other Radiant Black, like Nathan shows up and they have like a conversation and stuff like that about like how to use their powers and talking to like the inner like alien thing. Really good issue. This was Shadow War Omega number 1. This is like the end of Shadow War. Basically, this just tells you that Deathstroke died and comes back to life so then he can show up in Dark Crisis because he wants to kill the Teen Titans. He gets resurrected in the Lazarus Pit. The Closet number 1. This was a James Tynion book, a horror book from Image. It was really good. Pretty simple concept. There's a monster in her closet. In his closet, the parents don't believe him. The parents, you know, are like moving and stuff. So there's all this other drama involved, but still really good, creepy first issue. So I'll be checking out the next one. I thought I had a nice little grip at the end. Basically, the monster is like, okay, I'm leaving and I'm going to the new house that you're moving to, which is pretty fucked up. Justice Warriors number 1, Ahoy Comics. This was a fun book. If I had to relate it to anything, I would say it's like God Hates Astronauts, kind of. Basically, there's a city with a bubble, and the bubble's all perfect on the inside, and the cops keep the mutants on the outskirts of the city in control. And there's a lot of like on the nose stuff. Like basically, he's like a troll cop, and his partner gets killed by an automatic driving bus. So they get, he gets put with another partner who's literally just like a piece of shit. Like he's a poop emoji for a face, cause he comes from like the dumps. That's where he was raised. So there's a lot of like wacky characters like that. And it's just a crazy story, but it's a lot of fun. If you're looking for a fun book, and that's kind of like, I say it's like God Hates Astronauts because every character is like a weird looking like monster and stuff like that. I think it's pretty good. I'll be keeping up with it. And then, so I had some other books I didn't read this week, but Aquaman Andromeda by Ram V. It was a solid first issue. I'll keep up with it. basically, yeah, there you go. It's him running the Abyss, pretty much. The Abyss, and then Aquaman shows up. There's something like sentient living in the ocean. There's a bunch of scientists involved. The colors are really cool. The art is really cool for this book. It's some top secret government mission to go see this. And now Aquaman's involved.
I took it as there was a alien life form that came to Earth. And it's stuck in the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I love the way they drew Aquaman in this one. I love the costume. Like, it's really
cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool. Yeah, it is cool. I do like that, too.
Everything about it. It kind of reminds me of the first Alien movie. A little bit. Just underwater.
I mean, it's... Yeah, have you ever seen Abyss? The Abyss?
No.
This is pretty much... That's why I said it's the Abyss, because it's like scientists going down because they see there's like something extraterrestrial underwater. And they're like going down to explore it. Like that's pretty much the premise.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you were saying then. I thought you meant the Abyss was something else. So yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah, that's the premise of the Abyss, is like there's an alien life form underwater and, you know, hijinks ensue. Bad shit starts happening when they go try to figure it out. So,
okay.
Yeah. But either way, I think it's an interesting idea to have that with Aquaman around, because, you know, like Aquaman wants to figure out what's going on, too.
I was kind of thinking, too, when the Kraken shows up.
Yeah.
At least we're made to assume it's the Kraken. I was like, Oh, my God, did Starro fall down? And like, that's what they found under there. And
oh, yeah. That'd be funny. Yeah. Yeah, I think overall it was good. I'm going to be checking it out. I'm going for now. So,
yeah.
And then I had Batman 124. That was just wrapping up the whole Abyss, actual character Abyss story, unrelated to the movie. That's okay. I know they're starting a new, I think 125 starts a whole new, story arc. So I'm looking forward to that.
Chip Zdarsky's coming on.
Yeah. Okay. So now I'm ready to talk about Flashpoint and Dark Crisis. I don't know if you read anything else.
Oh yeah. So, we talked about a lot in the interview, but Questside number 2 came out this week. It was a really great issue. Batman Beyond number 3 was this week.
Yeah, I got to read that.
Basically, It was Batman kind of trying to learn to live without the suit. He finds out that this the guy who's taking over Wayne Powers Corporation is basically buying the police and is going to run it. And he has to try to make contacts with like the good cops in town and everything. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of like, I don't know. It felt a little bit like trying to turn Terry into Bruce, but I'll give it the rest of the story to figure itself out. But, yeah. Thor 26 was Hulk Thor and Hulk like fighting the whole time. So not a ton happened, but it was a cool fight sequence. Mm. A whole new, all different Savage Avengers number 2, was everybody was back in time and they all basically get arrested and put into this prison in Conan's age. And then the Deathlok comes for them and they have a fight with him and they come together as a team kind of issue. So, it was really good, but that's the gist of what happened. And then I read Monkey Prince number 5. So Monkey Prince is now in Aquaman's area. And he has to, not only does he have this like creature that's the daughter of someone from the trench coming after him, but he has to kind of overcome his fear of water. And I like how he's going to a different town now. And not only dealing with the different major villains, but obviously if we're in Amnesty Bay, we're going to get Aquaman at some point. So I kind of hope that's what Jean Lung Yang's doing, is sending him to different towns to interact with different heroes to kind of give him a jump start.
Yeah,
I'm really liking that one. Dark Knights of Steel number 7 was this week. And did you read that one?
Yeah, no, I haven't read all those books you just said I have to read still. Like Monkey
Okay.
Dark Knights of Steel. I haven't read that yet.
I won't spoil too much, but it's it takes up like where it picks up from the last issue. Mm-hmm. And we meet the Teen Titans. We kind of get the idea that the war is still coming. Beast Boy transforms into a really cool creature, and Bruce kind of gets his confidence to do the right thing. And I really like how they used Ma and Pa Kent in this, how they're different from the main universe and what mm-hmm. they do. Such a phenomenal book, and
it's really good.
If anyone's reading it, what the part where Beast Boy finally transforms and like helps Bruce out is awesome, especially if you're mm-hmm. a fantasy fan. That's all I'll say. And then the last one I have before we get into the big books was The Ward number one. This was the Kevin Scott book at Dark Horse. The basic premise here is that there's a hospital that's in like, it's almost Harry Potter like, where they have to go to this, they run into this building mm-hmm. and the building kind of splits magically for them, and they go basically through this portal to go to a different like land.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hospital for creatures, like magical creatures, like minotaurs and all that stuff. And like,
that's cool.
One of the doctors is a yokai. Another doctor can like split into two through a magical ability, like all this different stuff. And it's just kind of what goes on in that hospital. So it was really cool. And I'll check out the second issue. I think it was worth checking out.
Cool. Yeah, it does sound cool. I'll have to check
now
it out.
For the big crisis stuff.
Yeah, so I think we'll just talk about Dark Crisis number one first, because that, I mean, nothing really crazy happens in that one.
Yeah.
Some heroes think that we shouldn't believe what Black Adam's saying, that the Justice League are dead, because he's the only one to come back and he's an anti-hero. So then Superboy, well, the new Superman, I guess now, is going around trying to recruit everyone for a new Justice League. So that's pretty much a lot of the story is him going around asking like heroes and anti-heroes. And he kind of assembles this new Justice League that has like Harley Quinn, Killer Frost, Supergirl, Dr. Light, Robin, Blue Beetle, both Blue Beetles, Frankenstein, Jackson, and Booster Gold. But you have Nightwing. Nightwing needs to be the head of the Justice League is what they're saying, but he's in charge of the Titans Tower. Well, Titans Tower is under attack because in the Shadow War book, Deathstroke's dead. He comes back from the Lazarus Pit. He says, "I have a contract to finish." He's talking about the contract to kill the Teen Titans. He shows up and they attack Titans Tower, and he shoots, Beast Boy in the head, which is pretty cool. And then we get a glimpse of the Multiverse Dash 2, which is, I believe, the dark multiverse, where Pariah is saying that I will use the deaths of the Justice League to destroy the multiverse. So it's like all the Justice League screaming and says something to... that the he does mention something about like them believing Black Adam, so maybe Black Adam isn't telling the whole truth.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is I did really like that Beast Boy moment. It was very, the way it's laid out in the paneling was really great, and I also really enjoyed that like half the book was Superman going around being like, "You should be in my new Justice League because you're just like Wonder Woman," and then Nubia, I think it is,
yeah.
Just goes like, "Yeah, I'm not doing that." And then he goes to New York City to get the new Batman. He's like, "You should be my Justice League, and because you're Batman, I'm Superman." And he's like, "Yeah, the last Batman that did that died, so I'm not going to do that." And
yeah,
just
nobody
like
wants
he's getting
to be
rejected
it,
by the A-listers.
Yeah, nobody wants to be in it. Okay, so now which we realized is tied into Dark Crisis is Flashpoint Beyond number two. A lot of stuff unfolding in this book. I really hope Geoff Johns hits the mark with this.
Yeah,
because he's setting up a lot of stuff here. Yeah, so we get Thomas Wayne still going around. I mean, we find out his casino was burned down. He's trying to figure out where, what has changed, who he knows that someone is in the timeline that shouldn't be there. And then he hears about Psycho Pirate, ending up at I think he's at Arkham, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And he finds Psycho Pirate, but he's hung himself, and he's trying to question whether or not it was actually him that hung himself. And there's a lot of things written down, like, talking about, like, I'm not the real Psycho Pirate, and like Bruce Wayne, I'm not the real, Roger Hayden, and all this stuff. Like, what does that all mean? Like he, and people just thought he was crazy and like going insane. And you kind of see the conversation between him and Harvey Dent's wife. I can't think of her name, but he like hands her one of the casino tokens, and it's scratched on the other side. So you can kind of tell that she's going to become Two-Face, because she smashes her face into the door, like goes crazy and like cuts her own face up. So she becomes the new, she's going to become Two-Face, which is pretty cool. And then Batman takes to the streets, and this is kind of like where you see that he's gone off the deep end, because he's just like enjoying snapping people's bones and like is about to kill someone.
Not just someone.
Captain Boomerang. He's about to shoot Captain Boomerang in the head, which is to see Captain Boomerang like crying is pretty fucked up. Yeah. And then Superman stops him. And we haven't seen Superman in a while, like the Flashpoint Superman. We just see him stop him. We don't see the whole conversation, but then we get back to the Batcave with Bruce and what we thought was a Time Lord in the last issue, which is a Time Lord, talking about this, this snow globe that he stole, and this watch, because the watch is related to, what was the other, watch?
Was it the button?
Doomsday clock book, yeah. But he said that he stole this snow globe from someone, and they're going to come looking for it, and the Time Masters, like, he stole it from Rip Hunter, but Rip Hunter took it from someone else, and the time Masters aren't going to be happy that he did that. He also mentions the Divine Continuum from that blue-faced prodigy. I'm guessing the blue-faced prodigy is Dr. Manhattan. I would assume. Yeah, so I don't know what it all means, but it's somehow tied to the Dark Crisis, and I forget where they mentioned Dark Crisis, but
they mentioned the Dark Crisis is connected through hypertime, because that's why Psycho Pirate came to this timeline.
Okay,
was to escape a dark crisis, which we obviously know is the Dark Crisis.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Last we saw Manhattan, he had reformed himself as a small Clark Kent.
That's true.
And introduced himself to Ma and Pa, which I still hate, but...
Yeah, right.
So that'll be interesting, too. I guess, I mean, Mike's already heard this, but I guess I'll just say my theory again.
Yeah, you talk about your theory,
So now they're connected, and throughout this book, we keep seeing that, like, one thing I really enjoyed was Thomas was, like, constantly acting as if this universe isn't real, which to him it isn't, so...
Right.
But that aside, he was constantly talking about how Bruce is a better Batman than him.
Yep.
And I get the feeling that this is kind of the retirement of Thomas as Batman, that at the end of this, like... This will end, it'll lead into whatever the finale for Dark Crisis is, to bring back Bruce and the Justice League. And then Thomas will like hang up his tights and go on. That's like the surface level. My like extreme far left prediction that I really want to happen, the more I think about it, is that after that, like Thomas moves back in with Bruce and just becomes the new Alfred.
That'd be awesome. I would love that.
It would give it kind of a Batman Beyond vibe.
Yeah.
And yeah, which would be cool. Would just be kind of a different... Even though Alfred acts as Bruce's father in many ways, it would still give it a different vibe where it's his actual father. and he's been Batman. So, like, I kind of hope that's what's going on, but I, that's kind of my left field thing.
No, I would love to see that, especially if it's like a Batman Beyond dynamic. I think that'd be sick.
Yeah. And that would kind of lead in too to like why Bruce does take Terry on later on, mm-hmm. like beyond the stupid backstory that came with in Justice League Unlimited of like Terry's a clone of Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But whatever.
Yeah. But I thought, yeah, it was definitely a better issue. And I think it's interesting what they're trying to do. I just hope that Geoff Johns can tie it all up. You know, yeah, again, it's all excited, but I hope it like wraps up and makes sense.
I hope he sticks to landing. I hope the book comes out in a decent schedule. If it is connected to Dark Crisis, it will come out on a decent schedule. Like they'll put me on the art to get it done before they delay it.
They also have a few writers. I didn't realize there's a few writers on Flashpoint.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people. There's like a laundry list of people because I think they were like, this, if this is going to connect into our big thing, it has to come out. Like, we can't wait 2 years for you and Gary Frank to get your shit together like we did last time.
Yeah, that won't work. Sorry.
But, Mike, that was everything we read this week. So where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on Twitter, and you can find the show at FortressComics_ on Twitter or at FortressComicNews.com. Remember, everybody, to like, subscribe, share, and comment down below on the YouTube version of this, and to give us the 5-star review whatever podcatcher you use. If you want to go the extra mile, there's Patreon at patreon.com/FortressComics. And everybody, keep your eyes open this month for new merch reveals.
New merch.
It's going to be awesome. I promise you. I'm really excited for it. So thank you all so much for listening and watching this week, and we'll see you all here next week.